the Rink, your source for hockey talk without the entitlement. I'm James Tate Blake Gralian. It's time for a Tweetcast, my version of a call-in show. I asked Twitter who wanted to talk hockey and got back three responses. KFC from the blog A Little Chippy, Buddy Oakes, podcaster and blogger at Preds on the Glass, and my buddy Jay Kumar from the Completely Conspicuous podcast. We're going to try something a little different. We're going to let the Wookiee win. Welcome to the Rink. So first up on the Tweetcast is KFC. K of Chicago is your Twitter name. How you doing? And you have a blog ad. It's called A Little Chippy. It's a-little-chippy.blogspot.com.
Yes, right? Yes. So you don't get it mixed up with a different one.
It's nice to have you on, just cause, you know, not only because I get to have you on, but also because we don't talk about minor league hockey very often, and there's so many championships going on right now. The Fort Wayne Comets, who are nearby you, just won their third Turner Cup in a row. And since you live in the Chicago area, you actually have it's amazing how much minor league hockey is right around that area. And you tend to go to the Chicago Wolves games,
right?
How's the fan experience there?
I like it a lot. You can definitely tell there's people that have been fans for years, you know, since it was in the IHL and then the AHL. Mm-hmm. But it was new to me this season. I didn't go till mid-October. I don't know. From what I've heard, the Wolves had years there where they were, you know, actually more popular than the Blackhawks. So, yeah.
Oh, the Wolves were kind of on a lot of people's radar this year for one guy and one guy only, and that was Chris Chelios.
Right.
So I guess we kind of have to talk about him a little bit.
Yeah, the first game I went to was early in the season when I think they dropped six of their first seven, and then I went to a game, and the next time I went, they had a new coach, and things have been changed around. But and then I did see Chelios' first game with them, and which they lost that one. But then I saw another game where it was his first goal with the Wolves, and it happened to be the game winning goal. So it was
nice.
A really exciting game.
In that instance, I mean, he certainly contributed on the ice, but I mean, he definitely seemed like one of those guys who's, you know, his whole thing is just to be kind of a leader and settle things down. I mean, did you get the vibe from watching him play as to what his role really was out there? Or was that even important? I guess it's another way of asking.
Well, I feel like he definitely brought some attention and excitement to the team, and I think he was a good player this year. Then I guess late in the season he actually got pulled up to the Thrashers. Mm-hmm. We didn't see him for a while until the playoffs again. But I don't know. I was excited by it all, I guess. But well, I mean, I understand there are also people that were. Thinking maybe someone younger should get a slot or whatever, but I like seeing him.
Well, you may, I don't know if you remember or not, he did play for the Motor City Mechanics, that UHL team, during the lockout for a little bit.
Right.
It was the exact same thing, you know, should he, you know, he's taking a younger guy's job,
right,
and blah, blah, blah. So he's, yeah. I guess he's no stranger to that.
Right.
Now you're a Blackhawks fan.
Mm-hmm.
And, and of course the closest team to you is the Chicago Wolves, who's an Atlanta Thrashers, you know, farm team. So, you know, in that kind of context, I mean, isn't it a little weird, seeing that, you know, kind of cheering on the local guys, although they're not really the local guys and they're, you know, that sort of thing.
It is a bit confusing, and I realize next season I'm going, because this is the first season I really follow the Wolves or went to minor league games, that next season I am going to have to follow the Thrashers a bit, just because it's so exciting to see the players go back and forth. But I feel like because I'm so involved with Blackhawks bloggers and everything, that so many of them follow the Ice Hogs and want to go to Ice Hogs games when they can, and I don't know. It's all kind of split all year. I'm like, oh, the Wolves are here, and they're a really exciting team. I mean, the Ice Hogs did pretty well too, but I was really impressed with the Wolves, and I was like, I want to get more people out to these games.
I've always had a. I've been to the Ice Hogs. I haven't seen the I haven't seen the Wolves yet, but I saw the Ice Hogs a few years ago. Before they joined the AHL, and heck of a team and heck of a an atmosphere there. I mean, I don't know how much it's changed with the AHL team coming in.
Yeah,
I would guess not too much. But how did you find? I mean, it's obviously a team that has kind of that tongue in cheek name already,
right?
How'd you enjoy the games at the Ice Hogs?
The first one I went to was. It was during the Olympics, actually. They had Blackhawks night, so they had Niemi and some of the other players like there doing a signing, which was too long for me to wait for. But they were out on the ice a little bit of the game and everything. So that game was just, you know, obviously like sold out and huge and very exciting. And they had a narrow win over Peoria in that game. Yeah, I was pretty happy with it.
Yeah.
And then I went back. Unfortunately, the other game I went to with a friend was their last regular season game where they got shut out by Milwaukee. that was just painful. Like when Milwaukee shut them out 4-0. At least it wasn't their last game of the season because they were in the postseason. But then they got swept in the postseason. So
right by the Texas Stars, basically then rolled through the Chicago Wolves. Seven games at least in that one.
Yeah, seven games, and I went to the first two that were in Chicago, and those are kind of agonizing because they were very. I think that the first one. Chicago lost in overtime, and then the second one, Chicago won in like halfway through double overtime.
Oh yeah!
So it was my first double overtime game. So I'm very glad after all that they won.
But, yeah. Well, and right now the Texas Stars are down 2-0 to the Hamilton Bulldogs.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what happened with that.
I don't know how I usually feel about a team when they win. When a team that I like is beaten in like first or second round, do I want that team then to fail, or do I want to at least lose to somebody who's a winner, you know, later on? At least they kept going, you know.
Right.
There's
right.
a reason that we, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of, even though I saw them beat the Wolves and I was, you know, really disappointed. They, you know, I didn't get to see another round or two here. I kind of a soft spot for Texas because I have like family connections to Texas and Iowa where they played the year before. So I'm kind of like, you know, why not? It's their first year as the Texas Stars, you know.
Yeah.
I'm kind of impressed for them, I guess.
And finally they now have acquired the Iowa Chops franchise. So no more, you know, I was really hoping for the Ice Hogs versus the Chops, kind of that Battle of the Pig rivalry.
I know. Yeah, I love that website that like reviews all the logos for minor league teams. And, I think they didn't have a lot of positive things to say about those two.
No, I can imagine. I like the Ice Hogs logo though. I think it's kind of fun.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's kind of why I like the Cincinnati Cyclones logo because it's so ridiculous. But.
Isn't that great? I actually have my first game worn jersey was a Cincinnati Cyclones jersey.
Yeah, no, I have their hat because, I don't know. I just kind of like the rampaging Cyclone.
And of course, they're up 2-1 over the Idaho Steelheads in the ECHL Kelly Cup Finals.
Right.
You were saying that this is like one of the first years that you're kind of following the minor league hockey and the like. What is it about the minor leagues that's appealing to you right now?
Obviously part of it is, you know, the games are cheaper and everything, and you know, the excitement of following a player, like if they're going to, you know, get to the NHL, but I just really like the atmosphere in a lot of these places. You know, there's just something fun about going to see a game in a city where like that's kind of the big thing they have going on there. So people like really care about it or hopefully they do. You know, when I saw the USHL game in Des Moines, that was pretty exciting. It's like that team has been around for 30 years. I grew up near there, never went to see them, but it was just exciting to see how passionate people are can be about a team. So that just appealed to me. So
that's great. Yeah, and you've traveled around some. You've seen some different locations. What are there any favorites that stick out in your mind, like arenas that you really liked or places that had character?
The arenas were mostly, they're all pretty much built in the last few years or whatever. So yeah, I was at Dunkin' Donut Center because I love the name, and Providence. Saw games in Cleveland and Milwaukee. Of course, they also use those for basketball, Rockford and Chicago, Cincinnati. And then Des Moines is interesting because the arena is actually like from the 60s or something, or 1961. It's actually in Urbandale, a suburb. But it was almost like being in a high school gym kind of feel to it, frankly. But yeah.
Yeah, I hope you get to see some more, because there's a lot of differences in character and size and shape, and even in some of them, even the ice size is a little different by a good 3-4 feet each direction.
Right.
Yeah. So it's pretty surprising. Last question for you: the Chicago Blackhawks, you're at your favorite NHL team.
Right.
They're up 2-0. I don't know if you saw last night's game at all.
Right.
That was, how are you feeling about this run right now?
Pretty good. I don't want to assume they're just going to like steamroll through the next game, because their road record's a little better than the home record in the playoffs this year. But, I'm hoping to make it to at least one more playoff game here. But I don't know. I'm feeling pretty good about it, but I'm one of these people who's just been like super superstitious about making any kind of predictions. So.
I can completely understand.
Right. But yeah, no. I mean, I throw in more things that obviously, I feel like people in Chicago. I mean, the Blackhawks are doing so great, so that's what all the excitement is about. So I feel a little weird being this person who's like all crazy into all the other like minor league stuff, and I'm disappointed I didn't get to see a Toledo Walleye game, or I still haven't been to any college hockey games or Canadian junior hockey. So that, like, those are goals for next year.
Yeah.
So,
oh, cool!
It's like seeing the sport at like all different levels, basically.
Yeah, it's and the different shapes and sizes of the game, and how the different leagues kind of change the way that the league is, or the game is played, especially in like college, for instance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Kay, thanks a lot. I appreciate you chatting with me.
Sure.
Of course, your Twitter is K of Chicago, just the letter K of Chicago.
Right.
And your blog is at, what is it?
A Little Chippy. You can just Google that, and it should come up.
I'll definitely put a link to it on the Rink site. So cool. Thanks a lot.
Sure.
So on the line, I have Buddy Oakes. Buddy runs a blog and podcast called Preds on the Glass. And Buddy, we actually haven't talked since the beginning of the year.
No, we hadn't. I think last time we talked, I had told you that the Predators were going to make the playoffs, and we're going to make it out of the first round this year.
You were half right.
I was half right. And I was very disappointed in the second half.
Well, The Predators seem like one of those teams that keep making it to the playoffs. And then, I mean, how many first round exits have they had lately? It seems like they get to the playoffs and then they lose in the first round. What is it? How many has that happened with them?
They've been very consistent. They made the playoffs 4 years in a row, missed last year, and then this year they were back in, and they made the early exit too. So we've got 5 trips to the playoffs and 5 first round exits.
Wow. I don't mean to bang on a fan base. I mean, still the Columbus Blue Jackets fans would be more than happy with that at this point, I would think. but it's an interesting pattern to kind of watch.
Yeah, it is. And this year was, even though we were playing Chicago in the first round, the team was confident to a man. The coaching staff was confident. Fans were confident. Everyone was confident that we could play with Chicago. And had it not been for that terrible miscue at the end of the game in Chicago, where Marty Erat turned the puck over with just a few seconds left when they were on the power play and allowed Chicago to tie the game and then come back and win it in overtime, I think it could have been a totally different series this year. And if you look at the two series that Chicago has had since then, Nashville gave them a much tougher run for the money than they saw from either Vancouver or so far from San Jose.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely from San Jose. I want to read something to you that I wrote on Twitter, and it was done in humor, but I took a little guff for it, but still, I still stand by it. What I wrote on Twitter was, and this is a quote, Jason Arnott is the captain of the Predators. Things are worse than I thought in Nashville. Maybe that's a little bit unfair overall, but he was certainly at the time not having a good playoffs. He wound up scoring a couple of goals late in the playoffs. But mostly my question was, you know, is Jason Arnott the guy? Is he a real, you know, NHL captain?
Yeah. Well, you aren't the only one to question that. Right after the season ended, Barry Trotz got the nomination for one of the three people for finalists for the Jack Adams Award, and he was on NHL Live. And during the conversation there, Stan Fischler asked him about Jason Arnott as captain because he'd seen him previously play in New Jersey and never really saw him as captain material. And Barry gave kind of an odd answer at the time that, you know, that he's a team player and that he was doing something that he wasn't particularly comfortable with. Mm. And then the next day we had the season-ending press conference, and I asked Barry a follow-up question then on the same thing as to what he meant by that. And he went into a lot more depth on it and started talking about that in 2007 when they had some turnover in the locker room, that Jason was one of the older guys and had one of the bigger voices in the room, and he was appointed captain at that time, and said that it was something that didn't come naturally to him, but that he's grown in the role over the years and made a point of saying that he's done a decent job and that there was areas that he could improve in. So, you know, it's kind of a weird thing. From that point, he went on and started talking about Steve Yzerman wasn't comfortable when he first became captain in Detroit and gave a few other examples of different forms of captaincy. And the whole conversation, John Glennon of the Tennessean grabbed on to the answer and wrote some stuff the next day about it. And there's been several questions by John and also by several other bloggers as to whether or not this is some type of transition period to where Barry might be giving Jason a kind of way to ease out of it before next year or certainly after next year. So, you know, the fans have gotten on him a lot. They say that, you know, he looks like he's not giving 100%, looks like he's moving slow, things like that. And, you know, Barry has responded to that in the past by saying that, you know, big players, you know, a lot of times don't look like they're putting out the same effort as smaller players and things like that. But, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. It's really hard to say. The Predators are a very loyal organization. Over the summer, that Barry did say that they were going to reevaluate leadership as they did every year. Last year, they did make some moves on the assistants, elevated Shea Weber to the assistant captain. If there were to be a replacement over the summer, you would have to think that Shea would be one of the primary people they'd be looking toward, and possibly also Ryan Suter. But Shea is a little bit more outgoing and a little bit bigger voice, I guess, as Barry would say, than Ryan. So, you know, if something were to happen, that would be the direction you would think they would go.
Yeah, and they're both, of course, they're both signed long-term right now, or at least longer-term. than Arnott right now. Arnott's got one more year on his contract. Marty Rat and is signed through, was it 2014?
Right. Long now. Time.
And also, so is David Legwand.
Right. Yeah.
Which is an interesting name in that.
Erat and Legwand last year, year before last during the season, gave them longer term deals. And before the season, even David Poyle and both Barry Trotz both called them out and told them they were going to really have to up their game and play like they were a long term player. And, you know, during the year, there were times Marty Erat was the best person on the ice. Defensively, David Legwand had a real good year but didn't produce too many points. During the playoffs, he was one of the better players, though, when it came down to it. So they're going to be expecting a lot more out of both those players, not only next year but on into the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, they definitely have. I mean, they're two pretty good names in that. Arnott himself, you know, I mean, he does have the veteran presence and the experience. So it's hard to, you know, it's hard to discount him as a leader. But at the same time, I kind of look at him and I think in the same realm as, let's say, Joe Thornton in a way where, where they put the captaincy on him in Boston and maybe it wasn't such a good fit.
Yeah, I mean, next year, I mean, he's in a contract year next mm-hmm. year, and Shea Weber is also. So you don't know how. I would be surprised if Jason came back after next year. And so you really don't know how he would react if there was some type of change made and whether or not offering a captaincy to Shea would be an enticement for a longer-term contract before next year's contract is up. It's really hard to say. Mm. The Predators don't spend a lot of money. Everybody knows that. They have their own budget. This year it ended up around $46 or $47 million, and yeah. It won't be any higher next year, I can assure you. They most likely will lose Dan Ellis and Dan Hamhuis. I am imagining that they will try to get some draft picks for them sometime in the next month, trading the rights to them to another team. And during the trade period this last year, they traded away the second and fourth round picks. So I'm thinking that they would probably like to replace those or at least get another third rounder or something like that, because they've got a first and a third and then have several in the fifth through seventh round, which really doesn't usually generate a lot of prospects.
I was actually going to ask you about Dan Ellis, and you know, since I saw he is going to be a UFA, he still had a pretty – you know, I'd say solid season, it looked like. I mean, the numbers weren't as good as Pekka-Rinne, but it's obvious that Rinne is the number one goalie. So, you know, is there somebody in the pipeline? Is there somebody in the minors to call up in Dan Ellis' absence if he doesn't get re-signed?
I would not think so at this point. I mean, I would think that they would try to sign somebody else. I mean, it may be that they expect Pekka to play somewhere in the 60 to 70 game range next year. I wouldn't be surprised at that at all. Mm-hmm. He actually played most of the games from the Olympic break on and actually plays better when he is playing every night and gets into more of a rhythm. A lot of the team's problems were in the December to right before the Olympic break, where they were doing an alternating thing where Pekka and Dan were playing every other game, and neither one of them were really able to get into a rhythm. And once the Olympic break was over, they actually, you know, gave it to Pekka and let him run with it, and his play improved significantly. So I think we'll see a whole lot of games out of him. I don't know whether they'll sign somebody at near the minimum to take the backup role or whether they would actually let Chet Pickard or Mark Dukanich take that backup role. Neither one of them really look ready at this point, but, you know, they are the goaltenders of the future and are going to have to make the step at some time.
Now, all of this is kind of secondary in a way into what's, you know, the real big deal in Nashville, which of course is the flooding that happened recently. It affected the team, obviously, because some of the arena was underwater. Parts of Nashville that aren't normally underwater, you know, aren't even near water, were underwater. What's your reaction? I mean, how are things going in Nashville in general? For Nashville in general.
I live 45 miles south of town, and we didn't get quite as much rain as they did and didn't have the flooding problems here. There's parts of Nashville that are just totally devastated and may never recover. And these are nice middle-class neighborhoods that were never in a floodplain, never imagined that anything like this could ever happen. So it was a total shock. Didn't get a whole lot of coverage nationally at the time. It was going on at the same time as the Times Square bombing and the oil slick, and also the people being wound up in Arizona. So it was kind of the fourth story down the pipeline that weekend, and not a lot of people really knew about it. It was the places like the Grand Ole Opry House were completely inundated with water. Like you said, the Bridgestone Arena had about a foot of water in it down in the dressing room, and the whole rink had about a foot of water in it. LP Field, where the Titans play, was pretty significantly underwater. So, and really downtown Nashville was too. There was a lot of buildings that were closed with the lower levels being flooded. It was kind of an amazing thing. The town has really come in and pitched in. The FEMA people have said that they've never seen a town pull together in a recovery effort like the local people have in Nashville with all the volunteers and everything else. It's really been an amazing thing to watch, and it kind of reminds you why Tennessee is known as the volunteer state. It's really played out in this situation.
Are there any efforts going on to help that you know of? Is the team doing anything to help out the community at all? Anything like that?
The Predators and the Predators Foundation have been heavily involved with recovery efforts, and some of the players have been on the telethons that the country music people have had. The J.P. Dumont was out in neighborhoods helping haul stuff off and clean up. Basically, all the players who are still in town have been helping out. Mark Willoughby of the View from 111 has gotten with Danny Muccio, also known as Danny Three Boys on Twitter, and they put together a tweet up on June 7th that's going to be held at the Tin Roof in Nashville for all the local people to come in. And it's going to be all the Predators coaching staff will be there. The Predators have donated tons of stuff that are going to be auctioned off at the time to raise funds. There's a second part to it also, and that Mark and Danny and others are going to other teams around the league and trying to get memorabilia and collectible items and things like that from all the other teams, and are auctioning those off on a site on eBay. That should be set up within the next few days, and if somebody comes to my site, there should be a link there that they can find to go to and see some of the stuff that's been done. It's the outpouring of support and people sending things has been unbelievable. On our podcast on Monday, one of our guests, Sue Ring from Seattle, actually offered a puck that was signed by both Sidney Crosby and Denny Malkin. So, you know, just people coming out of the woodwork like that, offering things up for auction and to help out in the cause, has just been incredible.
Wow, if you have any links that you can send our way, and we'll definitely post them on the rink and put them out as much as possible for this. That sounds like a heck of an effort right there, you know, and some a good cause that and people can also, like you said, participate on eBay if they're not in the Nashville area.
Right, it'll be a nationwide thing and it'll be available for anybody to bet on, and. I mean, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to put a, LA Kings item for sale here in Nashville. There's probably not that many Kings fans, but, you know, people in Los Angeles, can have the opportunity to bid on something that they really might like.
Well, that sounds like a really good thing. Buddy, you're going to be down at the draft covering it, and also the NHL award show, correct?
Right. Looking forward to it. It's going to be kind of a combination covering the events and going on vacation with my two boys. So really looking forward to it.
That sounds awesome. Hopefully I'll be able to see you down at the draft at least. Buddy Oakes is from Preds on the Glass at www.predsontheglass, a Nashville Predator-centric blog and podcast, and also on Twitter at Preds on the Glass. Buddy, thanks a lot.
We appreciate it.
I'm finally joined by Jay Kumar of Kumar's Bliznog, the and the which is still one of my favorite blog titles, and the completely conspicuous podcast. Hi, Jay.
Hey, how's it going?
Excellent. People may remember Jay, of course, from episode 60 of The Rink, which was right before I went on a long extended break, which I'm hopefully back from.
I hope that didn't send you on a long extended break.
Unfortunately, bad internet sent me on a long extended break, not you.
Oh, good.
No, you were great. The rest of it. The internet, on the other hand, was just not being my friend for a while. Jay, of course, that also his Twitter account is Coomdog, KOOMDOGG, lots of extra letters. Sure. Jay also lives in Boston, even though he is a Maple Leafs fan. I really haven't had a chance to talk with anybody about the massive collapse of the Boston Bruins in the playoffs in round two. You were around Boston for that. I mean, it was.
I watched all those games.
It was quite something.
It was, in my opinion, the greatest choke in NHL history. And I was arguing that it's the greatest choke in sports history, but then somebody convinced me that the Yankees coughing up their 3-0 lead in 2004 to the Red Sox was bigger, and I had to agree. But it was pretty mind blowing, to say the least. And you know, like you said, I'm a Maple Leafs fan, which is my cross to bear. But you know, I kind of got on board with the Bees. I was, you know, I was obviously, you know, the coverage is pretty huge around here, especially, you know, they had a disappointing regular season. You know, the hopes were high at the beginning of the year, and, you know, they kind of had a lot of injuries and just were disappointing in general. Even though, you know, you had the goalie emerge and Tuukka Rask and unseat the defending Vezina winner and Tim Thomas as the starter. And, you know, they had pretty strong defense, but their offense was hurting. And you know, there was obviously the departure of Phil Kessel to the Leafs in return for what ended up being the number two overall pick, which in the long run, you know, looks like a pretty good trade. But in the short run, they sure could have used a guy like Phil Kessel in the playoffs because they had a pop gun offense.
Looking at that first game and how that first game ended, we had ended in just such amazing fashion with the Savard overtime game winner, and that just looked like something that they could ride forever.
Well, yeah, you know, and then they go on to take the next two games, and you know, really, like, even to get to that series, I thought they were going to lose to Buffalo in the first round. I mean, you know, going against Ryan Miller, you know, best goalie in the league in my opinion. You know, and Buffalo's, you know, team has handled them pretty well. You know, and I figured, I actually predicted Buffalo in five, and, you know, they knocked out Buffalo, and then, you know, and then they take those first three games, against the Flyers, and it's kind of like, you know, pretty much people were already looking to, you know, rooting for Montreal, which is, you know, sacrilegious around here, but you know, they hate Montreal, but they were kind of hoping Montreal would knock off Pittsburgh so they wouldn't have to deal with the, you know, scarier Penguins. But in the meantime, you know, Bruins lost game four in overtime, which is you know, they tied it up right at the end, and then you know, game, and then lost in OT, and then game five they got smoked.
Yeah, 4-0 in game five.
Yeah, just a terrible performance, and I think that was, people were starting to have some doubts there, you know. It was kind of like, uh-oh, what's going on here? And you could kind of sense folks getting a little nervous. And, you know, I was kind of saying to my friends, like, if they lose game six, I don't think they're going to win this thing, you know. Because you could see the Flyers just had more confidence and, you know, more momentum really off of that overtime win. They just kind of woke up. And man, oh, man, when the Bees lost game six, you know, it just, everybody just, there was that just feeling of dread around here, you know. And then in game seven, they get off to a terrific start. 3-0 in the first period. You're thinking, well, this thing's over, you know. And all of a sudden, the Flyers get one right at the end of the first. And there's that little seed of doubt. And then, boom, boom, they tie it up real quick in the second. And, you know, and it was just, people were just kind of like, didn't know what to do with themselves. So, and then, you know, you get into, you know, you're halfway through the third. It's kind of back and forth play. Actually, the Bruins, I felt, were carrying the play for the most part in the third, and after a terrible second period. And, you know, it was pretty chippy, and the refs were letting them play. And really the only thing that the only penalty the refs would have called, I felt, was, you know, shooting, you know, delay a game for shooting the puck into the stands or too many men. And in classic Bruins fashion, they get caught with too many men on the ice with about, you know, 10 minutes left in the third period. Mark Savard's going to get off, and then all of a sudden stays on the ice for some reason, and they get bagged, and the Flyers score about a minute into that power play, and it was just like, you kind of felt right there like they weren't going to tie it up, you know, and yeah, it was amazing. So, you know, they had a couple of chances, but for the most part, you know, it was just after that game, around here, it was just, people were just dumbfounded. I mean, you know, you really, like, sort of, I guess, being on the receiving end of, you know, what the Red Sox did to the Yankees, you know, folks were kind of, you know, kind of stunned. But I kind of felt bad for the Bruins, just because, you know, when they do well around here, hockey takes prominence, and kind of people were paying attention again. People were on the bandwagon, and you know, people who normally didn't give a rat's ass about hockey were talking hockey, which I think is just great in general. And the second they lost that game, everybody was just like, God, and they all turned to the Celtics, because the Celtics, meanwhile, were in the process of knocking off Cleveland, who were heavily favored to beat them. And now the Celtics are in the conference finals in the NBA, and actually have just went into Orlando and knocked them off 2 games. So, like, everybody, basically, I think people were kind of just don't even want to, like, think about the Bruins anymore and have moved on to the Celtics and the Red Sox. So, although the Red Sox aren't doing well either. But
I remember when I was there in Boston, the question, I mean, people were kind of bagging on the Bruins at the time because they had just gotten into a bad streak, kind of a poor losing streak. And then, and fans that I talked to, all seemed to be, concerned that it was not going to, you know, that basically the season was already over at that point.
Well, and they barely made the playoffs. I mean, yeah, they snuck in as the sixth seed, and really, like, they only made the playoffs, I think, like, in the last 2 days of the season. And really, like, they just had kind of prolonged stretches of poor play. And, you know, one thing that was going well for them, you know, they lost Savard to that cheap shot from Matt Cook on Pittsburgh, you know, late in the season. And, you know, the guy who stepped up was David Krejci. And he was really, like, their offensive leader and was playing great in the playoffs. And in game three against the Flyers, he got leveled by Mike Richards and dislocated his wrist and, you know, was out for the series. And right after that happened, they had no offense to speak of. And, you know, it was just, he was a sort of the creative offensive guy. You know, Savard came back in the series, but he really, even though he had that goal in game one, he, you know, he looked like he was still kind of you know, maybe 70%. You know, he wasn't making those crisp passes that, you know, normally he's their number one, you know, center, but he definitely, you know, probably had some cobwebs still in the old cranium there from that elbow. But, losing Krejci was huge. And, you know, the Flyers just, they play that aggressive style. They were just banging the Bees' defense. And, the Bruins' defense is, you know, pretty decent. But, you know, the Flyers found a way to kind of really kind of get in their face and, you know, cause some chaos and crash the net. And they seemed to solve Tuukka-esque, you know, after maybe the first game, you know, where, like, they were – They were succeeding with wraparounds. They were, kind of shooting high on them and getting some goals that, like, looked pretty savable, you know. And I almost thought, like, maybe after that 4-0 game, maybe you throw Thomas in there to see if he can do anything better. But
yeah, because Thomas didn't see a minute of ice time during the playoffs.
He actually came in.
Oh, he did?
In one of the games against Buffalo late in the game.
Oh.
A minute, but and I'm not really sure. I think it was a blowout, so they just put him in there and he gave up a goal. But yeah, he really, like, the guy hadn't played in, you know, since sometime in early April, probably. So, you know, but Michael Layton hadn't played in 2 months, so look what he's doing. Now he's all of a sudden, he's like the, you know, he's the story in the playoffs all of a sudden, so. Hasn't given up a goal in the conference finals. So, I don't know. You know, I was surprised that, you know, Claude Julien didn't mix up his lines more, but I think maybe, you know, he's kind of he's an old school guy who likes to, you know, stick with what he's got. And, you know, you ride the horse that got you there, I guess. And, you know, so that was his theory with Rask and with keeping the lines the same. But, you know, they definitely were, they definitely looked pretty flat there in the last part of that series. And, you know, that's pretty tough. That, you know, those guys are going to live with that for the rest of their lives, you know, being like the, you know, the last team to, the latest team to do that and only one of, you know, three in NHL history. And that's pretty rough.
So. Yeah. And, you know, it's almost like the fate of, I don't know, I don't want to bang on the same story drum that, sports writers in Boston tend to do, but you know, the disappointment of the Boston sports fan, and that it just seems almost par for the course for them. Yeah. You know,
well, that had kind of turned around though in recent years. I mean, you know, they've gotten kind of spoiled with, you know, the Red Sox winning a couple of World Series and the Patriots winning 3 Super Bowls and the Celtics winning a championship. I mean, you know, people around here. Really, the only team that hasn't done anything is the Bruins. You know, the last time they won the Cup was 72. So people are kind of used to really the lament around here. Is, you know, the Bruins fans are the sort of there. You're always going to have your diehards. But, you know, they never really catch on with the general populace until they go deep in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You know, and it happened, you know, last year there was a disappointing Game 7 loss to Carolina. In a series that they thought, you know, in the second round, they thought they would have that, you know, they would have handled them easy. Carolina had knocked off the Devils in that stunning upset. You'll remember that last game where they scored a couple of goals on Brodeur in like last like 80 seconds of the game to win that series. But you know, Carolina surprised them in 7 games, and now, you know, the Flyers are the same. So I think, you know, folks around here are kind of like, you know, they kind of throw it off on, you know, the owner, Jeremy Jacobs, not wanting to spend the money to bring big name free agents and folks like that. Cause that's sort of always been the case. You know, the Bees have always had teams that were good enough to make the playoffs, but not really, you know, go very far. And even the years that they were in the finals in the '80s, they were in the finals in 88 and 90, you know, they lost to Edmonton, and Edmonton was just like, you know, basically swept them both times, and it was just, you know, it wasn't even fair. And, you know, the Bruins basically had, you know, probably like 3 or 4 guys who were sort of on the level of the Oilers, and then, you know, the rest of them were just scrubs, you know? I mean, you had like Cam Neely and Ray Bourque and, you know, a couple other guys, but, you know, they just didn't want to spend the big bucks. And actually now they've got a lot of money tied up in you know, guys like Chara and Tim Thomas and, you know, a few others, but, you know, at the deadline, you know, when they needed some offense, you know, I think a good move might have been to get a guy like Kovalchuk, but they didn't want to, you know, they didn't want to give up too much, I guess, and ultimately that cost them. Although, you know, I guess it didn't help the Devils that much.
Not
either,
that much, so. No.
But, you know, I mean, maybe, you know, if the Bees have Kovalchuk, you know, maybe they get that goal they need to win the fourth game. Who knows? Mm.
The I think the telling thing for me is going to be not, you know, we're talking about the offense, of course, but for me, I think it's going to be kind of the defense and what they do next year. One of the examples, of course, is Johnny Boychuk, who's going to be
great.
Oh, he's excellent. Yeah. He's going to be an RFA next year. So
yeah, he came out of nowhere. He wasn't even starting, you know, like even like the last month of the season, he kind of stepped in because Eidenberg got hurt. And he showed me a lot, especially the Buffalo series. He was leveling guys.
Oh yeah. He was, the previous year, he was the AHL Defenseman of the Year. And,
that's right.
He was given up by the Avalanche.
Oh really?
Yep. Yeah. I believe in a trade, but, you know,
you think they could use a guy like that?
Yeah. if he had actually played for the Avs rather than his, rather than the Lake Erie Monsters, at any point, I think that, people would be, questioning it a lot more, but, I think that's a guy that, I think that's a guy that they should lock up for a couple of years.
Definitely. Jeez, yeah. He showed me a lot. He was banging guys out there, and, you know, and looked, you know, fairly adept, you know, moving the puck around,
mm-hmm.
You know, I think he's, you know, I mean, a guy like Dennis Wideman, who last year was really good for them, was terrible this year. He just had a horrible regular season and started to come on the last few months and played fairly well. I mean, he still made a couple of bonehead plays, you know, ill-advised passes and things like that. But, you know, I thought he had played pretty well. Obviously, Chara, you know, some folks kind of question, him being the captain, but I honestly, like, you know, people, I think, expect him, you know, he makes big bucks. They expect him to, you know, score 15 to 20 goals. I mean, he's not that kind of player. I mean, he is a monster on defense. He, you know, he literally, he goes into the corner against the guy. He's coming out with a puck. But, mm-hmm. You know, I just think that...
he's not, you know, necessarily doing it by knocking a guy on his backside either. I think he has a lot more skill for his size than people expect. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I really like him. I think, you know, as the playoffs, as that series wore on, you know, the Flyers just had too many big bodies they were throwing in there. And, you know, I mean, the Bees basically had like one or two versus, you know, six or seven. So it was just too much, I think. And, you know, obviously, you know, with, big guys like Pronger on D just, you know, playing 30 minutes a game. I mean, he can still play. So, and you know, actually, I was really impressed with the Flyers' defense. They blocked everything. I mean, kind of like what Montreal did to Pittsburgh. I mean, the Bruins' points could not get any shots through on net. You know, they had to like dump it in the corners and try to kind of come out of the corners, but they could not get a shot. They could not get a point shot on the goalies to test them. So, I mean, there's a testament to just, you know, all those guys on the Flyers, you know, sacrificing their body. And as much as I cannot stand the Flyers, man, you got to tip your cap because they were great and they still are. I mean, they're probably going to the finals. So
I take it you didn't see the HBO documentary?
Yeah, that was terrific, actually.
Oh, you enjoyed it, yeah.
I mean, I hated those teams, but, like, it was great, you know, as well. Did you see it?
I did see it.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was really well done. And, you know, it was a show called Broad Street Bullies, basically documenting sort of the rise of the Flyers in the mid-70s. And, yeah, I mean, I remember watching those teams beat the crap out of the Leafs every year. Those were some bloody playoff series. They had a couple of years in a row where they had, like, six, seven-game series in the quarterfinals, and Flyers won them. But, like, you know, they were just bench-clearing brawls. They didn't have the, you know, the rule, like, you know, when you – back then, basically, that's what led to, you know, them instituting that rule. Like, if you jumped off, came off the bench to join a fight, you know, you were thrown out or suspended. So, back then, it was just 20 guys, you know, 20 guys versus 20 guys on the ice, and the goalies are fighting, and it was craziness. But yeah, that's like actually if you anybody who has HBO should see if they can check out that show because it was really good. Just a lot of good footage of like you know the expansion days and then the early 70s stuff. It was pretty interesting.
And some of the last views you're ever going to see of the Spectrum in Philadelphia yeah. since they're tearing it down soon.
Yeah. So.
Which is just sad. Just sad to me. I mean, it's just,
yeah. I mean, you know, it's happening all over the place.
Yeah.
So. They had Mellon Arena's all done, right? So
Mellon Arena is done. It's yeah. it's funny that that the way that they lost their last game there, you know, and just
they were terrible in that game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wasn't even close.
No,
I just figured I just never saw them losing that series. Washington, yeah, but Pittsburgh, man. It just felt like they had, you know, just so much more. And it was the same thing as what the Flyers were doing. It's, you know, guys like Hal Gill, who, ironically, when he was in Boston, was basically run out of town because he was too soft and he wasn't, you know, he didn't do anything and blah, blah, blah. I mean, look at the guy. I mean, he's a force out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think people around here didn't like him because he didn't fight, but, you know, the guy gets in front of stuff, you know? And they're all doing it. And then you had all the little speedy forwards of Montreal really just wreaking havoc on the Penguins. I mean, you know, Penguins defense obviously was exposed. But you know, we're seeing the Flyers have much better defense. So
I'm trying to remember his name. Gomez was not, still hasn't really, I don't know. He just doesn't seem to come up a lot for, you know, for what you expect of him.
He looked good in the last two series, but he's taken some stupid penalties so far in this series. I've noticed like both nights he's been in the penalty box when the Flyers have scored key power play goals and, you know, sort of that have sort of led them to win the game. So he's taken dumb penalties, which, you know, he's probably one of their better penalty killers. You know, you can't have him off the ice and you can't let the Flyers, you know, get those chances. But, yeah, it's you know, I questioned Montreal's strategy going with all these little guys in the last off season, but I mean, you guess you know, you give them some credit, but I don't know.
Oh, there was the
it doesn't work against a team like the Flyers, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, there was an article on Puck Daddy about the small forward and, you know, the Danny Briere, for instance, you know, who's basically nobody is, you know. Very underachiever in a way for his money in and the big contract he signed for the regular season, and then look at him now.
Well, he's I don't know. Was he hurt or was he just not playing well?
I don't know. I think he was just you know, kind of. I think he was more just not playing well. But you know, it's always hard to tell. I always think of what's his name, Timo Solani, and his knee injury, and you know. That, was there a guy that was benefited more by the lockout? Probably not. You know,
right.
Gets well, his you knee know, done got, and comes back and is a damn good player again.
You know, it's like Gagne. I mean, he's been hurt his whole career, but when he's in there, he's damn good. And between him and Briere, man, they have just been lighting up. They lit up the bees because I think since Gagne's been back, he's had like six goals in six games or something like that, and Briere's just been. You know, I think guys like that have a lot more room to move around because they've got, you know, kind of these bigger dudes out there like Hartnell and Carcillo and Richards and even Van Riemsdyk, you know, kind of creating room for them. So, you know, they can kind of zip out of like these, you know, little scrums with the puck and bang, it's in the net. I mean, they have just been awesome. So, you know, it's funny because the Flyers kind of sucked all year, you know, they were pretty mediocre and they barely got in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Actually, your last show, I thought that was interesting that one of you guys pointed out that, you know, if it was ranked, if the playoffs went 1 through 16, you know, overall instead of by conference, those Montreal and Philly wouldn't even have made the playoffs. So.
Mm-hmm. This is
know,
true.
So talk about turning it on at the right time. So.
Well, is there any other, you know, is there any bigger story for them other than goaltending, really? I mean, the amount of injuries they had, even into Boucher's injury, is he sprained both knees by one of his own players running into him.
That was ugly. Did you see that?
I did not see it.
He basically like three guys ended up on top of him, and he immediately just threw off his blocker and was just grabbing his knee. So like he knew that was bad. Mike, we're not gonna see him again.
And then look what happened. Leighton stepped back into net, and here he is again.
Yeah, and he'd sprained his ankle. He hadn't played since March, sometime, and it's amazing. And really, like that first game against the Bruins that he came into, they barely tested him. He only had I think he faced 14 shots, but none of them were really that good. Really, he's played better. Actually, he really hasn't had to do a lot of work against Montreal either, right? I mean, he's had probably like 30 shots a night, but, I don't think they've been tough shots. So, give the guy credit,
Oh, absolutely.
Basically, nailed to the bench for 2 months, and now all of a sudden he's leading his team towards the finals. So, Ray Emery was their starting guy at the beginning of the year.
And only played 29 games.
Yeah. So, what did they go through, like 7 or 8 goalies?
Five of them actually played ice time, according to TSN. Jeremy Duchesne had the least amount of...
Who is that?
Yeah, exactly. He had 16 minutes of ice time total, but he was in. Johan Backlund had a game, 40 minutes of a game. Leighton Emery and Boucher.
I think Backlund actually came in the game, one of the games, one of the early games in the series.
Hmm. He did?
I thought so. But maybe it was actually after Leighton, not in this series, but in against Boston. They had some move where they like pulled out Leighton. It was Leighton or Boucher. I don't know. I thought it was him, but I could be wrong. Another guy who's been great for the Flyers is Ville Leino.
Oh, yes. Especially last night.
He was, last night, but also against the Bruins. He was dominant at times with the puck. There was one play, I forget what game it was in, but he literally took the puck from behind the net, got a shot off, got it back, took another shot, set up another guy, and they scored a goal on it. It was like all Leino. They couldn't stop him. There's a guy who couldn't even get in the lineup a few months ago. Mm-hmm. It's amazing, how people kind of step up in the playoffs. So.
Yeah, especially considering Carter's. Carter's a guy that the Flyers really need right now, and he's not around.
Apparently, they don't need him. So
yeah, exactly.
But yeah, leading goal scorer, and guy hasn't played in quite a while, so. I'm still rooting for the Hawks. Actually, I like the Sharks too, so I kind of hope they make a series out of that one.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they're going to. It seems like
losing to at home. Jeez. That first game, I watched the first game on Sunday, and the Sharks played really well. It was they basically carried the play, but Niemi played out of his mind, and then Big Bufflin there got the goal at the end, and he's been playing great. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody could stop him. The guy's just, maybe like the team that can stop him is the Flyers because they've got the big, the big guys to kind of match him. But nobody, the Sharks sure don't. So.
Yeah. Sharks are a pure, at least to me, they're a pure skill team, They're running into a team that has both skill and toughness. Is there another team in the that's left that has both, because Flyers certainly have toughness, and I think that they're showing skill against some teams that maybe against teams that aren't ready for what they actually have, but I kind of think that the Blackhawks are going to be ready for the Flyers if that's going to be the matchup for the finals.
Yeah, they can bang, so that'd be a good matchup. I kind of look forward to that. Hopefully, I'm hoping Chicago wins. Let's see the original six team win it, and they haven't won it in, almost 50 years, right?
So 62, I think.
Yeah, so
Yeah, it's been longer than it has been for the Leafs, and everybody bangs on about the Leafs.
I could say that about.
Yeah, that's the thing. Everybody always says, "Oh, the Leafs haven't won it since this and you know this time." And what about the Blackhawks? You know, but nobody expected the Blackhawks to really, you know, I mean, look at where they were just what, 3 years ago,
right?
Yeah. Nobody cared about them. Nobody thought they were going anywhere. They weren't going to spend any money. They weren't going to build a team. And now selling out all the time.
Yeah. I went to a game there in 2004 at the United Center against the Rangers. I think it was Messier's last year. But, like, you know, the place was half empty.
Wow.
You know, it was just kind of, you know, lackluster. You know, it was kind of sad, you know. But, I mean, you know, it just goes to show what, you know, the, you know, Bill Wirtz died and, you know, his son kind of stepped in. And one of the first things he did was, you know, put the games back on local TV again, you know, because it's Bill Wirtz, you know, was one of the kind of old school guys who's like, you know, make them come to the game. Don't just give away the game on TV. But, you know, if you want to build your fan base, let people watch the games, you know, and, you know, and obviously they've done a great job drafting and, you know, picking up free agents and, you know, I hope they, it's a good story, you know, it's a good story, it's a great uniform, it's a fun team, I hope they win.
I went to a playoff game a couple weeks ago, Hawks versus Vancouver, and
that's right,
it was incredible.
It was incredible.
It was absolutely an amazing atmosphere.
That was a good series.
It was a pretty good series. I thought, yeah, when you said a little earlier that Ryan Miller, you know, probably the best goalie in the NHL right now, I was just thinking about, of course, the first thing that pops in my mind is Roberto Luongo. And there's a lot of accusations right now that he's overrated. And I'm kind of having a hard time disagreeing right now.
I'd have to agree with that. Yeah. I mean, if you look at, you know, we talked about this, you know, we watched that gold medal game in the Olympics together, and he was fighting the puck in that game. Mm-hmm. You know, and he only won by virtue of, you know, the offense stepping up, but, you know, he was struggling in that game. He didn't have a great regular season. I mean, he had an okay regular season, but, you know, same thing happened in the playoffs last year against Chicago. They were winning that one game. Listen, I don't know if it was the last game, but they were winning that one game, like, I don't want to say it was like 5-1, and they ended up losing, you know, basically in the third period. I mean, it was soft goal after soft goal. I mean, mm-hmm. I think he crashed the net and he gets flustered. And, you know, yeah, it's interesting because, you know, they made him the captain. So, you know, what do you do? You know, I know Don Cherry's kind of come out and said that that's a mistake. And, you know, no modern day team has done that. I think the last team who had a goalie as a captain was the Habs in the 50s with Bill Dernan. So, I mean, that's going way back. So, you know, it's just a different, that's a lot of pressure.
I personally don't take a lot of stock into what Don Cherry, you know, says, because, you know, he enjoys mispronouncing people's names. And if you and I did that over and over, we'd get called on the carpet so bad.
it's funny because, like, I disagree with a lot of what he says, but he's entertaining. I mean, you look at those suits just for somebody to have the Naz to wear those suits every week. I mean, I love watching Coach's Corner, but yeah, he says stupid stuff. And you know, a guy like Lefty Ponikarovsky, who used to be on the Leafs. You know, they would talk about the Leafs a lot, and he would always call him Polkahosky. You know, just like he always would just, you know, intentionally butcher guys' names.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's certain, you know, clownishness to him. But I mean, I think, you know, he makes some good points every once in a while. Yeah, Luongo, I think, you know, yeah, I guess, you know, and I'm not one of those, like, anti-European guys like Don Cherry, but, you know, they've kind of built that team around the Sedin twins, and obviously, like, you know, Henrik had an awesome year and led the league in scoring, but, you know, it kind of makes you wonder, you know, can they lead that team to, you know, to greatness in the playoffs. Even, like, you know, everybody was falling over all over Ryan Kessler this year. He had that great, you know, Olympics for the U.S., and he didn't do anything in the playoffs either. So, I think it was just a team collapse, but made more obvious by Luongo's shortcomings.
Yeah, and especially some of the goals that were getting past him, a few of those few of those that he'd look back at behind him and then immediately just get frustrated with himself. And I think everybody in the building pretty much was.
Yeah.
So you're kind of predicting, in a way, that it's going to be a Blackhawks and Flyers Cup final.
Easy to do when both teams are up 2-0.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks that way. I'd like to see. Well, you know,
Boston and saw what happened there.
Yeah. Well, I imagine if that happened twice in one playoff here. Holy moly! But no, I mean, it certainly looks that way. I think the Flyers are just better than Montreal. I was shocked that Montreal got this far. But yeah, I mean, the Flyers, the way they're playing, I mean, they appear to overmatch Montreal. Now, who knows? Maybe Halak gets hot again, and you know, we thought Montreal was done against Washington and Pittsburgh. So, but yeah, I mean, I'd like to see the Sharks kind of come back, but I don't know. Going into Chicago, down 2-0, that's going to be tough.
Yeah, that is. Especially that building is that building's quite raucous, and I bet it's going to be pretty crazy when they get there.
It's funny because like the Boston Garden, when the Bees were, you know, going in the playoffs, like they that building was probably the loudest I've ever heard. You know, people were really into it, and it's just a shame that they lost that series because a Boston Montreal conference finals would have been incredible.
Is there that the rivalry goes back so far?
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, they beat them last year in the first round. It was a great series. I mean, it's just, it's, you know, there was like 40 years or something where they lost, you know, to Montreal every year, and then finally beat them in the late 80s. I remember being in college and seeing that, and that was like historic. But yeah, I mean, if they made the playoffs, I mean, if they made the conference finals, those two teams, I mean, that would have been pretty incredible. But yeah, it's it's still fun to watch. I mean, I guess, like, you know, Montreal and Philly also kind of competes for like who can trash their city more. So, you know, I couldn't believe the riots they had in Montreal after they won that second round. It's like, hey guys, you still need to win a couple more rounds before you burn your city down. So,
yeah. That was, yeah, they seem to riot quickly there.
Jeez.
I think back to, I think it was the 2003-04 season when Raycroft won the Rookie of the Year. And Montreal bounced him in, in the first round in 7 games.
I was at, and Bruins had 3-1 lead in that series.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually at game 5 in Boston for that. And
I was at game 7 for that one.
Oh, were you?
Yes. Yeah.
That was one of the things that kind of led to Thornton going out of town, because he didn't do much in that series, and he ended up getting traded not too long after, maybe a year and a half later. But that was a huge disappointment for. They had a pretty good team. You know, they had Thornton and Guerin. You know, they had some pretty good players on that team. But yeah.
Raycroft won the Rookie of the Year that year.
Yeah. He was never the same after that either.
No, he wasn't. Yeah. Was there a guy that the lockout benefited less?
Yeah.
Maybe Dave Anderchuk, but that's probably about it.
Yeah. Jason Allison. No. Eric Lindros. No, basically anybody who was old.
Yeah.
And slow. But yeah, Raycroft, man. He turned into Tuukka Rask for Boston.
Mm-hmm.
What a terrible trade that was. God. Leaf.
Oh yeah, you know how that goes. And then of course he's going to of course the one thing that Boston will benefit from is that Kessel draft pick. They're picking what, second overall?
Yeah, Taylor Hall or Tyler Seguin, right?
So, yep, whoever's left.
Yeah, of course it'll be interesting to see, you know, what they try to do. I mean, some folks are predicting that, after that loss, that, you know, Claude Julien would get fired. Hasn't happened yet. I think Chiarelli is not too hot-headed, so I have a feeling like he's, you know, I'll probably stick with him, but it'll be interesting to see if they, you know, if they feel like this team has gone as far as it can go after two straight, you know, game 7 losses, or, you know, they're kind of, you know, like I said, they've got a lot of salary tied up in some guys, so I'm not sure exactly what they can do. Obviously, when Miro Satan and Mark Recchi are your best offensive guys, you know, you probably need to do some work there. You know, after Krejci went down, that was all they had really. And Lucci started to pick it up, but he's not a goal scorer. He's kind of like a Bufflin type, he had two goals in that game seven. But yeah, they've got some work to do if they want to, you know, advance. So interesting to see, you know. And do you rush a kid, you know, an 18-year-old kid into the lineup, or do you send him back to junior for some more seasoning, you know?
Mm. It just seems like a team that is so, I don't know, this is a team that knocked off the, you know, the Buffalo Sabres, you know, I mean, that's not, you know, and do you want to really, you know, push those buttons so fast? And maybe Shirley is right in that, you know, in not being a hothead and kind of, you know, thinking things through a little bit.
I think he's a smart hockey guy. So, you know, I don't think he's going to blow it up, but obviously, you know, they need to do some more tinkering. I just don't know, you know, what they can do. Mm-hmm. Even in the Buffalo series, you know, at times they were struggling with goal scoring, you know. It just, for them to score, they had to work a lot harder than it seemed like the Flyers seems to work, you know what I mean? Because they don't have a guy like a Briere who just, you know, pucks on a stick, pucks in the net, you know. They had to really bang and, you know, and really like exert a lot more energy than some other teams. But, you know, maybe that'll change, you know, when you have like a, because I think they've got the Leafs first rounder for 2 years. So they've got like this year, and then they've got next year too. Now next year, you know, as a Leafs fan, I'm hoping it's not, you know, a top three pick again, but you know, I think they'll be a little better than they were this year. But I mean, it's still, you know, they've got two first rounders this year, you know, they've got their own and they've got the number two. So, they, if they draft well, could end up, building something, you know, maybe his plan is, you know, a couple of years down the line. I don't know. But obviously a guy like Char is not getting any younger. So.
This is true.
This is true.
Well, Jay, the Stanley Cup final is right around the corner. I look forward to talking to you a little bit during that.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. Jay's blog is Kumar's Bliznog. Like I said, one of my favorite blog names at jzkumar.blogspot.com. You're of course the proprietor of Completely Conspicuous podcast, and at Coomdog, KOOMDOGG on Twitter. Thanks a lot, Jay.
Thank you.
That does it for episode number 62 of The Rink, and we bid goodbye to the Amarillo Gorillas of the Central Hockey League. Perhaps if they changed the S at the end of Gorillas to a Z, got some beats, maybe some cartoon characters, the minor league fallout starts early. You can find The Rink at www.rinkpodcast.com, where you can subscribe in iTunes or make comments about anything that you heard here. The Twitter feed is twitter.com/rinkpodcast. Email us at rink@rinkpodcast.com, and you can always call us at 845-704-RINK. That's 845-704-7465. Thanks a lot for listening to The Rink.